Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. One of the many areas in which conservative control of the North Carolina General Assembly over the last decade has made an extremely visible impact is in higher education. Thanks to the legislature's installation of conservative loyalists at various UNC system and campus boards, UNC leaders have taken a raft of controversial, high-profile steps in recent years in everything from the selection of new chancellors and the hiring of professors to the response to the pandemic. Earlier this week, I sat down with my colleague, NC Policy Watch investigative reporter Joe Killian, to review some of these decisions and how they're reshaping UNC. And as Killian told me, the impacts are many and include the likelihood that the new year could bring an explosion of COVID infections on UNC campuses that are insisting on returning to in-person instruction. Well, Joe Killian, Happy New Year. Welcome back to News and Views.
Happy New Year. Glad to be here.
You cover so many topics for NC Policy Watch, but one of the ones that's been at the top of your to-do list in the past year has been higher education and the UNC system. There have been some big stories there. Those stories indeed continue right now as we speak. If there's an overarching theme, though, and we see it in some of these stories that you reported on, it is the ongoing consolidation of power by conservatives who've been appointed by the North Carolina General Assembly. In more and more areas, one can see their imprint on hiring decisions and policy decisions, decisions in terms of the academics that students are exposed to in the UNC system. I know the Nicole Hannah Jones story was enormous in 2021. What are some of the ones that really stand out to you as you look back on the year in higher education in North Carolina?
I've never been primarily a higher education reporter in my career. I had some higher education experience early in my career, but higher education in North Carolina is a political beat right now. That's never been more apparent than it was in this last year. And I think the highest profile example was the Nicole Hannah Jones saga that we covered. If for people who don't remember, Nicole Hannah Jones is an award-winning, Pulitzer Prize-winning, National Magazine award-winning, Hulk award-winning journalist who's incredibly respected in the industry and in academia, certainly at her alma mater, UNC Chapel Hill's Journalism School, and they pursued her for a professorship there, and conservatives had a problem with that. Conservatives on the board of trustees had a problem with it, and the named donor, Walter Hussman of the Journalism School, who's contributed $25 million or pledged it at least, had a huge problem with it, and it got held up. It wasn't that they denied her tenure. They wouldn't vote on it. They wouldn't take an up or down vote. And after a long struggle where students and faculty and the public and Nicole herself all jumped in and pushed for that up or down vote, they got one and they approved her tenure. And she said, yeah, but this conflict has shown me that this is not the place for me. So she went over to Howard University, where she's putting together a new academic center and raising tens of millions of dollars to do so.
Hannah Jones was not the only faculty member who was lost to UNC. There were some other faculty members who were on the faculty who decided to depart, to leave the university.
Yeah, there were some high-profile names who left. There were also some people that they were pursuing in different disciplines very strongly who came out publicly and said, I'm not coming there, and the Nicole Hannah Jones incident is why. It had an effect that was measurable, and it continues to have an effect that is measurable on the university's reputation and on its hiring.
And another rather high-profile story you reported on involved law professor Eric Muller, who was the chair of the board of what's called the UNC Press, who had sort of been renominated, I guess, by his fellow board members, was sort of celebrated for his leadership of that group. But he's also been a critic of some of the actions that have been taken by the conservative leadership of the UNC system. And the message went out pretty clearly that Mueller was not to be reappointed to that job at UNC Press.
It was a remarkably similar sort of situation. You can sort of see the political parallels here, because it wasn't that they told him or anybody else that he didn't have the gig. It was that the system is that you put forward names for reappointment. And although his colleagues had unanimously voted for him to be another term as the chair of that board, the UNC Board of Governors, the committee that deals with that just wouldn't vote on it, wouldn't bring his name up, and sort of through back channels said, send us somebody else. And they went, well, that's not how this works. The reason that you don't just appoint these people is because we have to put people forward. And they were like, yeah, but not him. Well, why? because he's been on the board too long? Were there other people who've been on the board as long that you are reappointing? What about that? Let's not talk about it. So yeah, it was a big mess. And, you know, in the end, ultimately he lost in the sense that he had to sort of accept that his options were have a long protracted legal fight with them that might get in the way of the press's work or step aside. And it's interesting because with Nicolina Jones, the problem was people had political problems with her work. They didn't like her work. They didn't like things she'd written. They didn't like some of her social views. With Mueller, you know, he's a law professor. And primarily the ding against him was that he has been asked as a law professor at UNC and an expert in certain areas of law about the constitutionality or the legality of some things that have gone on at UNC. And he has said on the record what he thinks about that in his expert opinion. And they do not like that. They would prefer that he say nothing or that he back the university up.
And the other high profile personnel matter that one of the others that you reported on this year and most recently involves the selection of a new provost, who's really the person who sort of the day-to-day, as I understand it, chief operating officer at UNC Chapel Hill. And the Bob Bluin was the person in that position for a long time, I gather is retiring. It's been clear that there's a shift, a political shift there with the selection of this new Professor Chris Clemens.
It's interesting because, you know, Chris Clemens is right now the chair of physics and astronomy at UNC Chapel Hill. And the controversy really is that when they're looking for a new provost, there's always concern that there will be politics involved in this. And there were sources who told us that there was pressure to bring a certain type of candidate, a candidate that conservatives on these boards could get behind and feel comfortable with. And he certainly fits that bill. He gave a speech in 2013 at the school wherein he explained why he is an astrophysicist for Jesus. He has touted his own conservative credentials to people at other schools and called himself one of the most conservative voices at the university and in his school, certainly, and was part of putting together a explicitly conservative program at UNC that they tried to model on programs that exist at other schools. So this is the person who's the chief academic officer at UNC, and people have some questions about that. If it was, you know, if it was the other way around, if there was a professor or a chair who was saying, I'm the most liberal voice, I'm the most progressive voice at the school, I want to tout all of my connections to all of these liberal and progressive causes and groups on campus, I'd like to tell you about, you know, my religion, and it was anything except for a conservative rendition of Christianity, then it would be a non-starter, you know, couldn't even have the conversation. But for somebody with this CV in the current environment, this is just perfect. He's on the team.
We're talking with Joe Killian, who's an NC Policy Watch investigative reporter, about some of the reporting he's done in 2021 on the ongoing political pendulum shift in the UNC system. Another issue, Joe, that really sort of evidences this, it seems, that really you've reported on really almost 2 years now, and you've had a breaking story this past week on, is how the university is responding to the pandemic. And it would seem that the basic conservative take on the pandemic, which is that we're going to have as little interruption, as little interference by government as possible. We're going to try to keep it business as usual, even if that ends up perhaps leading to more infections. We're going to stick with that. That seems to be where UNC Chapel Hill is. And there are some rather sobering numbers that some epidemiologists have forecast as to what that might mean in the new semester that's getting underway.
You know, from the beginning of the pandemic, it's been obvious that to everybody in every walk of life that this is a political issue as well as a public health issue, whether we like it or not. And the way the universities have dealt with it in various states or even within our own state sort of revealed that. Early in the pandemic, there was this push to have everybody just come back to campuses, live in residential housing, go to classes in person. And this was against the advice of the, in Chapel Hill's case, the Orange County Health Department, who explicitly said this was a bad idea and here's, you know, here are the bad things that could happen. And they plowed ahead with it anyway. And what they ended up with was an overwhelming number of infections at a time when there were not vaccines and much less was known about COVID-19 and its variants. And ultimately, the largest schools in the system, NC State, UNC, Chapel Hill, ECU, all ended up sending students home. There's been a slow return to campuses and sort of phasing out of remote instruction, except in special cases, as vaccines have become available and people have become more comfortable with levels of risk. We know more about this disease. But where we are right now, I mean, we're seeing the worst numbers in North Carolina that we've seen in the entire pandemic, courtesy of the Omicron variant. And while that variant is different and the situation is different because of vaccines and boosters that we have, epidemiologists at UNC are projecting that we could see as many as 22,000, over 22,000 infections in the first 30 days. And that's information that the public wasn't given, that a lot of people at the university level, even fairly high up faculty members, didn't have, students weren't given. And the way that UNC Chapel Hill has decided to deal with it is to let the deans of individual schools make decisions about remote learning for a temporary period, with the idea that the default will be to get back to in-person instruction and on-campus living and all of that. And, you know, the political part of this really is which tools you take off the table when you're dealing with this. There are things you can do and there are things you don't do, and then there are things that are not even available to you. And the UNC Board of Governors and the president of the system and the legislature that is majority Republican that appoints those people have made it clear that in-person instruction and living on campus and going about these things, sports, all of that stuff, as close to normal as we can make it, is a priority. And when these variants happen and when we see waves and when people express, you know, public health concerns, those things are all taken through the lens of, well, right, but the default is this. We'd like to do this. If you just look across the way at Duke University, which is smaller and a private school, they have vaccine mandates, booster mandates. You know, they push things back when there's a wave. They do more remote instruction. And those things are just not available at UNC. Chancellors in the UNC system, some of them have said that they would prefer to see a vaccine mandate. That's just a non-starter with the legislature, with the Board of Governors. They're not going to do it. And no matter how many schools or state schools in the country do it, it's a discussion they're not willing to entertain. And that's making a lot of people nervous. There are large faculty groups and student groups who are pushing for that, or at the very least pushing for remote instruction or remote instruction for a certain period and for it to be done in a uniform way. And because of that political pressure and the fact that this is a political process, it's got to go through these political appointees, that's just a tool they don't have at their disposal.
And we should probably note that these political appointees, for the most part, have been meeting, a lot of them having their meetings online, I guess. Maybe there's been some in-person meetings at these boards. It's sometimes a bit of a contrast there. The story that Joe wrote this past week, COVID-19 infections could peak at 1,650 per day at UNC Chapel Hill. You can find it at NC Policy Watch. So as far as we know, Joe, going forward, as we come to the end of our time, no sign that these political issues will abate when it comes to the leadership at the UNC system in 2022. We expect, I presume, to see more of these kinds of efforts by conservatives to sort of consolidate their control of the university system.
Sure. And, you know, one of the things that we wrote about that was important last year was the change in the way that they're dealing with choosing chancellors. There have been conflicts and controversies over chancellors and their interactions with faculty versus the political appointees, and that they have to serve both masters, basically. And the way that they're doing it now is the president of the UNC system gets to essentially take anybody he likes, even if they're not part of the original search process, and put them in as a finalist and then choose that finalist if he cares to. And Peter Hans has been sort of startlingly frank about this and said, I think a lot of that was probably going on anyway. We're just formalizing it. We're just making it, you know, out in the open that I can do this. And they're having chosen Daryl Allison, who's a lobbyist for conservative causes and former member of the Board of Governors himself. He stepped down from the Board of Governors to apply for the chancellorship at Fayetteville State University. And his having been given that job, and even some of the trustees not being very happy with it, just sets up a precedent where they can now point to that and go, well, we've done this before. And here it is. It's not unprecedented. It reminds me of a sort of an old story that from Lyndon Johnson's administration. One of the Robert Caro books, I think. This is a great story about Lyndon Johnson goes to visit Harry Truman and Bess Truman in their retirement and sees that they're living out in Missouri and says, you know, on this farm essentially, and says, hey, you guys are getting up there. You ought to have a nurse, an army doctor with you. And Harry Truman says, could I have that? And he goes, you're a former president of the United States, Harry. Of course you can. I'll make it happen. And he does. And a few years later, a reporter goes out and visits Lyndon Johnson in his retirement in Texas on his ranch. And he sees that there's an army doctor with him. He goes, you have an army doctor? And he goes, of course I do. Harry Truman's got one. You know, once you create a precedent for something, you can sort of do what you like and point to the fact that it's just the way things are done now.
Well, political people interested in politics will be paying close attention throughout the 2022 to the discussions at UNC. Joe Killian is our special investigative reporter at NC Policy Watch. He covers a whole raft of important issues. We'll have him back on News and Views in the days and weeks ahead to talk about some of those other issues. But you can find his coverage of the UNC system at ncpolicywatch.com. Just look for his byline, Joe Killian, and a lot of those stories will pop up. Joe, thanks so much. Happy New Year. We'll talk again real soon.
Thanks again.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncpolicywatch.com. You can also listen to all of our interviews and commentaries on Apple Podcasts. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.